And yet, but indeed, what you say, I will say. You get ch- all right. Okay.
Has a Belky?
I know that's just jibber jabber.
I like this and you like that. It's just another review podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, cause it's now.
Hello and welcome. Me and we were just talking about Russ's penis. Hi and welcome to just another review podcast. I'm one of your two hosts, Sean.
And I'm the other half, penis. I mean, Russ. Sean and I have been friends since the 80s.
Yeah, and that's a long time.
And for this podcast, we review stuff.
Like the first episode. Like the first episode of a new streaming show and a movie from our childhood. And we let you know if you should watch it or avoid it.
Consume it or castrate it.
That's very fitting. Thank you. With that, Russ, what are we reviewing this week?
Well, thanks, Sean. We're going to start with the series Yellowstone, which we watched on Amazon Prime in Canada. We're looking at episode 1, Daybreak. Good to know that Yellowstone originally premiered on June 20th, 2018 on the Paramount Network. But I don't have that station, so I had to wait till it came to Canada on Amazon Prime. This episode was 1 hour and 32 minutes. That's a long.
That's long for a pilot episode.
That's a long episode. That's a long episode for anything.
Yeah, I was cursing you at first, but it was just at first. It only lasted for about until I started the show.
Now, like we're supposed to in this episode, in this podcast, I only watched one episode. But I did look ahead to see if other episodes were this length, and I think this is one of the longest. I think on average, the episodes are anywhere between 54 to 42 minutes in the future, if someone decided to watch further episodes.
Right.
The details of this episode is John Dutton tries to protect his ranch from land developers, an Indian reservation, and America's first national park.
Dun, dun, dun.
This show stars Kevin Costner, an up-and-coming actor, Luke Grimes, Kelly Riley, Wes Bentley, Kelsey Asbill, or Kelsey Chow, Danny Houston, and Gil Birmingham. Episode 1 was directed and written by series creator Taylor Sheridan, also written and created by John Linson. I saw this episode for the first time when Amazon Prime was pushing it up in the top of the banner, with their banner there, and in the app, and that kind of got me interested, and then I heard a few things about it, and that's why I recommend it for this podcast.
Nice. I had nothing. I was the same. I started to see this pop up in the top banner of the Prime, and you said, let's do it. I said, let's do it. Taylor Sheridan, you've got a note here, Sicario and Wind River. Is he the director, writer, producer of those? What is he of those?
Definitely, I would say writer, director. He definitely created those two films, and I enjoyed both of those.
I loved both of those movies.
Yeah.
So, Sicario is fantastic. Wind River is also fantastic. So check both of those out. If that's any hint, this show hopefully is fantastic as well.
Did you know anything about the Paramount Network? Did you know that it existed? Did you?
No, but I think people might have been able to catch this on something like AMC or something like that in Canada prior to that. I've got a feeling, I don't know, but I've got a feeling that if you had good old-fashioned cable, that you might have been able to see the show back in the day.
Definitely if you lived in America. I guess Paramount Network used to be the Nashville Network, the National Network, and then in 2003, it was Spike TV.
Oh.
And we watched Spike TV as kids.
Yeah, we know Spike TV.
It was the first network for men, or so it called itself. And then in 2008...
It was the first toxic masculinity channel.
Yeah, that's we can blame Spike TV for all our misgivings.
You know what? Fuck you, Spike TV. Oh, there's a swear jar.
So
again,
every time Sean swears, he has to put money in the swear jar.
I kind of purposely did that there, just so we could get the swear jar out.
Thank you. Thank you for doing that.
What are we up to now? Couple grand.
Well, I
put your kids through college with the last episode.
Yeah, which is great since they're many years away from college, so it's a relief for me.
Well, you'll just bank on that interest then, I guess, won't you?
I'm retiring early. Yeah. So any other thoughts before we dive into this episode?
No, other than I've got a real thing for Kevin Costner. I love all of his movies, even the bad ones, even The Postman. I enjoyed The Postman. So, although I can't speak too much about some of his newer stuff, I know he just had a new one in the theaters, I believe, with Diane Lane.
Okay.
I'm going to, I did not see that one. But yeah, Kevin Costner and me, we're tight. We go way back. For some reason, the guy reminds me of my father a little bit.
Of your dad?
Of my dad. I don't know why. I think it's the side profile or something, but maybe somewhere along the line, I share genetics with Kevin Costner. Way down the line.
I just assumed when you were a kid, your dad neglected you, so you watched movies and just kind of sucked onto Kevin Costner. And just thought that was your
sucked
dad.
On the Kevin Costner teat.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, this is the time where we're going to break it down. Russ, let's get into it.
Well, I broke down this first episode into three acts. So act one, we meet the family. So John,
Wait, stop. I got to start beyond this. Did you write this?
Yeah.
You did write these?
Yeah.
You didn't get any help at all?
No, I
didn't copy paste anything. I just want to make sure that your citation is correct here.
Thank you very much.
You give me shit about every time I write something. So, no, I'm just kidding.
I give you shit every time you copy and paste something from the internet. Yeah.
Well, I edit it.
Well, good. You changed a few things.
Come on, man. We got kids. I don't have time to write this all the time.
You just got time to edit it.
There you go. There's my trade-off.
Hey.
You've got time to write it. I've got time to edit.
I'll be writing the synopsis from now on.
And I'm going to change your voice from now on, too. You're going to be a small girl.
Oh, in post, you're going to edit my voice.
Yeah, you hear that right now?
Is this what I sound like now?
Yeah.
I love you, Sean. You're my best friend.
Okay, I think we'll stop it right there.
Okay. So, act one, we meet the family. John Dutton, performed by Sean's dad, Kevin Costner, is the patriarch of the Dutton family.
I'm going to regret even making that comment now, but you know what? It's good. It's going to make for good times. Banter.
Sean's dad is the patriarch of the Dutton family and controls the Yellowstone Dutton Ranch, a big valley in Montana. Jamie Dutton, Wes Bentley, played by Wes Bentley, is the clean-shaven lawyer son. Beth Dutton, played by Kelly Riley, is the one daughter of the family that runs mergers and acquisitions for another company. Lee Dutton, which is played by Dave Annabelle, is daddy's go-to son, working on the ranch alongside his father. And finally, there's Casey Dutton, played by Luke Grimes, who's the war veteran and the family outcast who lives on the reservation with his wife and son. That's the Dutton family.
That's right. Yeah, we spend a good chunk of the first part of the episode just getting to know all the players on the chessboard, correct?
Yeah, they're really setting the table with these characters, taking their time.
And man, does this show start with a bang? And no pun intended, but John Dutton's in some sort of a car accident with another trailer and his horse is pinned. And of course, he has to do the responsible thing and put his horse out of the misery what's the word? Euthanize it. That's the word I'm looking for. Euthanize it with his trusty sidearm that he just conveniently has with him. It is Montana.
They like their guns. To bear arms. And luckily,
I don't know if they like their guns. I'll take that back. But they are in America, where guns are definitely a lot different than up here.
Sure. Yes, the show, this episode starts with killing a horse and it ends with getting a new horse. So there's a little horse bookending in this episode.
Spoiler, Russ likes to jump to the ending.
Spoiler alert, he gets a new horse. A couple notes I made for Act One. There's the daughter played by Kevin Riley, Beth, mentions that women don't live past 40 years old. So I think she's kind of talking about her mom or the family's mom. But we obviously don't meet a mom, so we assume that mom has died. but that was not communicated in episode one. So
I've got that note too. She says a little later on. So I've got that note later on.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We'll come back to it.
Well, or not. I won't allow you to.
I'm not going
to
go. Maybe. Okay.
Other things.
Stop. We're going to talk about the characters. Let's talk about her. Okay. You started talking about her.
You want to talk about Beth?
I do want to talk about Beth. She is a firecracker. Where is this girl from? You tell me.
Tell you, Sean? Well, let me tell you.
Russ is the one that does the research.
I've done a little bit of research. I recognized her right away from True Detective Season 2.
And okay, I've never watched True Detective, so I'm not privy to...
Right. Well, there are three seasons of True Detective. They're all their own story, their own actors. I would recommend watching one and two. The season one and three. But season two of True Detective was kind of not as well received. But Kelly Riley is in it, and she's fantastic in True Detective season two. She was also in Flight with Denzel Washington.
I've not seen. Yeah.
She's great, and she's great in this show. I was definitely spellbound by her too. I think she's got amazing charisma in general, and she pops. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, she's got quite the screen presence, man, and just her the writing for her. She is a force to be look out.
John, do you have a little crush on Kelly Riley?
No, I'm just saying I was really blown away. I was just really blown away. I've never seen her before.
Okay.
She was just probably scared the shit out of me, to be honest with you.
In a good way?
Sure, yeah.
When a woman scares the shit out of you, what does that mean?
I don't know. She just look out.
Yeah.
If she was coming your way, I would just like move to the side.
she would destroy you. That's a foreshadowing.
Let's move on to someone else.
10. There's just a lot of really cool actors here. So and to the point where Sean, I'd like to introduce a new game. I think this is the first episode that we've ever done of a star-packed show. So I want to do a little game called 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. So I believe...
Not of Kevin Costner? It would have been so much better if you had thought of this.
But you can choose Kevin Costner if you want, because what I'll do you can name any one of these actors that we've talked about so far. And I will connect him to Kevin Bacon within 6 movies or less.
All these actors?
Any one of these main actors from Yellowstone. I will see if I can connect them to Kevin Bacon in 6 movies.
But you've already done all the research on this. This is cheating, it feels like.
It's a fun game, and I'm introducing something new. Oh, and if you don't want to play, Sean,
I do.
You
know what?
I'll play by myself.
This sounds fantastic. I'm so glad that you came up with this.
Just trying something new.
I know you're a busy guy. You've got lots to do. I really appreciate it.
It's just for fun. We're just having fun here.
Let's do it. Okay, so I pick one of these actors from this show, and you will link them to Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, 6 movies or less. Can I do it? Can I do it?
Kevin Costner.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's start with the obvious.
Start with the obvious. Here we go. Sean, I'm keeping eye contact with you on Zoom. I'm not looking at my notes. Kevin Costner. Kevin Bacon, JFK. Boom. They're in the same movie together. It's called JFK.
Oh. Well, that's easy.
That's easy. One film.
That's easy.
You're going to do another one. You're going to challenge me again.
Yeah, let's do Cole Hauser.
Cole Hauser. Who is Cole Hauser? He wasn't an actor we talked about.
Oh, I only get to pick out of the 5 main. I thought you said I'm looking at the IMDb cast list here.
No, I said you cheater. I don't even. Okay, you can name an. I just don't know who Cole Hauser is.
Let's see if I can do Cole. Oh
yeah,
Hauser.
You do Cole. All right, Cole Hauser, go for it. So this is fun now.
To Kevin Bacon, right?
To Kevin Bacon, right?
Okay.
Acclaimed actor.
Cole Hauser was in Dazed and Confused, and there was a shit ton of people in.
Yeah, there you go. There's your guy.
Okay, Cole Hauser's Dazed and Confused with Matthew McConaughey. All right, McConaughey. Now, was he directly linked to Kevin Bacon?
You know who he's related to?
Who? You put me on the spot. This is good. Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey's in what?
Lots of stuff.
What's recently?
Interstellar?
Right, exactly. Who else is an Interstellar?
Michael Caine.
Well, Wes Bentley from Yellowstone is in it. But John Lithgow is also in Interstellar. He's the dad. He's the dad. Mm. He's the granddad. John Lithgow. You know what John Lithgow and Kevin Bacon were in? Why don't you feel it? Groove it. Groove it. Listen to the music. What do you think?
Got a foot loose.
There you go.
There we go. Okay, we did it together. Tag team.
Tag team.
Tag team. Okay, so
that's our new segment. That's a new segment.
Oh, sorry.
Six degrees of Kevin Bacon. Oh. We virtually high-fived. Couple
swear jars in there. Okay, so just to recap, Cole Hauser, Dazed and Confused, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey.
John Lithgow.
Interstellar.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. John Lithgow. Matthew McConaughey.
With John Lithgow.
Yep.
John Lithgow. Footloose with Kevin Bacon.
You
wasn't
did it,
that
man.
Far.
You
nice.
Did it.
Nice.
You
nice.
Did it. We can do this.
You take that shit to your next dinner party when COVID's over and you rock the room with that, man. It took the second viewing for me to know that I saw his name in the credits, Cole Hauser, but then realized who he actually was. His big mop of red curly hair is hidden under a cowboy hat. He's the main henchman.
Oh, okay.
And Cole Hauser was also the truck driver in Dazed and Confused. He had one of the pickup trucks and he had the little loudspeaker and he pulled up to the junior high school in the beginning and, you know, gave the speech to the kids. Hey, if y'all come out here and get a licking, we won't hunt y'all. So he has that big curly fro of red hair and he made the custom paddle.
If you say so, I believe you.
Oh, my God.
I remember the movie.
I'm putting Dazed and Confused on some watch list here. Oh, shit. There you go. There you go. There you go.
I think they're called ranch hands. I don't think they're called whatever you just call
henchmen.
I don't think this is not an evil enterprise.
Well, we'll get into it. I don't believe that this guy is just a ranch hand. He is a henchman as well.
Okay.
Kevin, let's go back to the show here. Act one still. We're learning about all the characters. Kevin Costner, John Dunn. He's constantly speaking in like verses. He's never actually on the nose with anything. He just sort of speaks in these verses. And I imagine, you know, growing up, if you wanted a cookie, might have been kind of hard to figure out where the f*** they were when you're talking to your dad. He's like, Dad, can I have a cookie? You know, when you become old enough to find the dough to put with the sugar, you might then walk away with a treat.
A cookie only knows where it is when it's being digested.
Shit, Dad, all I want's a cookie!
Maybe that's how their mom
died. But anyways, did you find that too? You know, it's always like you're solving some sort of riddle when you're talking to him.
Right. I didn't pick it up specifically from him. I definitely really enjoyed the writing style of the show. But so that I will now rewatch or maybe continue to watch this show and try to look for that. He's a very poetic father figure.
Yeah. And he doesn't he likes to ride around in his custom helicopter the whole movie like a pimp. So this guy's a Don, man. He's like Don Corleone.
He's like
Wes Bentley, you mentioned Wes Bentley. You know, he's in a lot of stuff. The thing that sticks out a lot to me is his early days when he was the quirky neighbor in American Beauty. He was Kevin Spacey's love interest in American Beauty.
No. That explains so much.
He's a good actor. I really like Wes Bentley, and I've warmed up more to him over the years and stuff. But I find he's got this odd, soulless look to him. You know, he's got these almost soulless eyes. Quirky, he's a good actor though, but yeah, I find him, he's kind of like Tamara Taggart. He's got no soul.
Tamara Taggart, a local newscaster in Vancouver, British Columbia. Sean just compared.
I'm sorry, Tamara. I just always say You Have No Soul.
Oh, wow. I don't know her personally, so I wouldn't.
I'm just aware. Kidding. I better take that out. She gives so much to charity and does stuff fast. She makes me look like a bum. But yeah, at least I have a soul.
I think. I have no idea. It's good cast. Are you ready to move on?
No, I got a couple more points I'd like to make. The young brother. Him and Lee are the only real true cowboys. I'm wondering what his story is. He's damaged goods a bit. He's really melancholic. Is that the right word? He's a little
melancholy
sad all
is
the
a
time.
Word.
Yeah. You know, I just don't melancholic like yeah.
Melancholy. I wouldn't. Yeah, that's.
I don't know.
That's a far stretch for me. I wouldn't try to use that word in that way.
I shouldn't try and use words like that.
I would just mess it up.
He's kind of sad. He's kind of sad all the time.
He's got sad eyes instead of soulless eyes.
Yeah, he's. You know, probably obviously, financially, he's the poorest of the bunch, yet I find him the richest of the bunch, if you really look at what all of them
His
have.
Life is rich.
His life is rich. His he's got experiences. A beautiful wife, a beautiful son, he makes an honest living,
he knows how
he's
to
he's got
command
a sense
a horse.
Of family.
Yeah.
You know, people might say, hey, you know, he's got nothing, but he's
got everything.
He's got a lot more.
Yeah, and I mean, two of the sons are kind of daddy's sons, so they work for dad. The daughter is the only one that seems like she's actually made it successfully, financially, outside of the family unit. She works for this acquisitions firm, mergers and acquisitions firm. But you're maybe laying the groundwork here that the son that seems the furthest away from the family, but also seems the most suited to run the family, may come back to the family?
Maybe. We'll get into
predictions. That could be a prediction for if you continue to watch the series.
For sure. I think Casey is the one that definitely got away, and I think it still pulls on John, yeah, Kevin Costner's heartstrings that he didn't stick around, that he's not the Lee of the ranch.
Yeah, there's a very like Succession vibe throughout the whole episode where you can tell that the Kevin Costner father figure is looking at all his children and giving them feedback, or just implying certain things as far as like, well, when you're taking over the business, you're going to need to be more this or that. So he's endowing that into all like the three kids that are very involved in the business, but the one son that's not, that's kind of the outcast of the family, is not having those conversations with his dad, but also you can tell that is probably the most qualified to run the ranch if his dad was ever gone.
Yeah, he's not having those conversations because he's not around, but his dad is trying to have those conversations with him, you know, as
they've had a falling out.
Yeah, Kevin Costner tries to have a visit with his grandson, Casey's son, and tries to warn his son of the sort of impending conflict coming, and again speaks in verses and tongue the whole time, and you can try and figure out what Kevin's really trying to tell him. The last son, Lee, he's quite one dimensional. There's not too much about him, and I think that's for a reason, and we'll get into
it. What happens to Lee? Act two. There's enemies on all sides. So John's got two main conflicts. Kevin Costner's character's got two main conflicts that's introduced in this episode. These main conflicts are, one is the developer named Dan Jenkins, which is played by Danny Houston, who is using a neighbored land to build a subdivision with its own dam. Because in Montana, you can do whatever you want. You can build the dam to power your residential block. And you don't have to pull permits. But spoiler alert, the water runs through the Dutton's land and then into the developed parcel. So that may... You don't want to make enemies with your neighbor if the water runs through your neighbor's property. The other big conflict is a casino owner and chief, Thomas Rainwater, played by Gil Birmingham, who's playing political chess with cows. I guess I said two conflicts, but I guess there's actually a third. The real emotional conflict that we've already referred to here is John's son, Casey, who initially wants nothing to do with the family or the family business. But Kevin Costner is constantly kind of reaching out to him, and under the guise at this point that he just really wants to know his grandson. I just want to know my grandson.
I just want to know my grandson.
My grandson should know his grandfather.
Yeah, Kevin's added some grit to his voice in this character, eh?
Did you add that?
With a bit of a grumble to his voice.
Now be poetic.
The rainwater falls and collects in my pants.
Are you referring to Thomas Rainwater?
It's what I do with it after. That makes a difference.
Natural lubricant.
I'm Batman.
Where's Rachel?
I like this chief. This Indian chief, he's a hard ass man. He understands the old ways, his heritage and all that. But I think he understands that enough is enough. His reservation and his people need rejuvenation, I guess, funding. I'm not quite sure what his end game. I guess is land. The end game is land.
Reclaim the land that was stolen from them. Yeah,
he who controls the land controls the money. So they want their land back for their people. And he's come to terms and he's let it known he's taken a new approach to this.
Right, and I think it's mentioned a few times that the Dutton owns like the largest cattle ranch in this area, whether maybe it's even in Montana. So this is target number one for Chief Rainwater for sure.
Right, our first major conflict. And I mean, I got a note here. Ranching is big business. These guys were here at an auction place. Auctioning off a bull in the background in one scene, and at one point it's still going for over $100,000 at one point. This is for one single animal, like almost like racehorses. Big money, big business. Don't kid yourself. Ranching, there's a lot of money involved, right?
Well, people like beef. Have you heard of beef?
Genes go a long way.
Yeah. You mentioned the henchmen, or how I like to call them, ranch hands. Within the second act here, as we proceed through the episode, we really get to know the employees of the Dutton Ranch. And the one that I connected with was Rip. And he also seemed to have the interesting relationship with Kelly Riley's character. But
He always ruins their weird
sexual relationship.
Yeah, she just wants straight up hard sex, and he wants to take her out on a nice date, and he ruins it.
Right.
She's so obviously got no emotion. He wants more. She's soulless, like Wes Bentley.
Come on. What's with the
soulless? She's soulless like Wes Bentley and Tamara Taggart. They're a three-way, the three of them.
Hey, if you're in good company now, I guess if it's Wes Bentley, Kelly Riley, and Tamara Taggart, you're in good
Special
company.
Special edition, CTV Evening Soulless News. Tamara Taggart, Wes Bentley's special guest, Kelly Riley.
I'm watching it. Mm. I guess now we're starting to see a little bit of a darkness within this Dutton industry in regards to the fact that these ranch hands have marks that they've been branded with, like the logo.
The Yellowstone logo has been branded on Rip Kohlhauser, the henchman.
Yeah, at least him. And more.
As we find out. But and here he is. Wrangling this meth head from a trailer park as a favor to one of John's, we don't know,
sure,
old buddy, yeah, business associate, who knows. And John says, well, if you want this done, we're going to do it my way. And the guy's like, sure, just get my nephew just reformed.
Give my nephew a job. You okay?
Yes. So John sends his henchman.
That means I brand him.
Yeah, to his nephew to brand him. And that's I think that was a real turning point for me, because while I never, I never thought John was some sort of an angel or whatever, a model citizen. But I didn't realize how much of a badass gangster he was until this scene, where you realize that he brands his sort of help, his henchmen help, or people, I guess. What I figure is he brands these people that he's giving second chances to.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, is it a second chance thing, or is it I own you, you're an employee, so you get the brand, or is it a second chance thing?
And no, this is your chance for redemption, right, and to redeem yourself. Obviously gave one to Rip. Rip's redeemed himself. He's now giving this junkie, Johnny, I believe his name is.
Junkie Johnny.
Junkie Johnny another chance here as well. And who knows how many times. And I'm also thinking maybe John's not the first one to do this. Maybe this is a passed down family tradition. This is something that his grandfathers would do.
Maybe John has one himself.
Maybe.
Only because it's the company logo, I feel like it might be a John thing and not a family thing that's been passed on, but it could be.
But that logo has been in the family for centuries too, I imagine.
You know, I don't think so.
No?
Pretty
simple maybe, logo.
Maybe it's a, I just feel like logos is kind of like a...
Yeah, it's the one thing that can change over time, you know, but yeah. The fact that it's called Yellowstone Ranch, I think, has been since day one.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. So
there's a good chance that logo's been the logo forever, and
before they made logos.
Had to brand their horses with something one day, and that's been done since...
Right.
I mean, I'm not any historian, but I imagine since they started branding, they had to do some sort of logo or shape or
it was the original brand.
It was the Y.
Before we could put little digital graphics on the internet, we branded our company's logo on cows.
Into the second act, this writing, the writing and the acting is just top notch. I'm loving the show so far. I'm just I'm glued. It's got dips, it's got valleys, but I'm not bored or anything. I'm totally interested. There's a whole bunch of subplots going on, but the way that they've done the pacing of the show, I find it's really good. You're not getting lost in any of them and confused, but you're also you're getting enough of each of them to still keep it fresh in your head. They're doing a real good job at moving around through all the subplots and then circling back to them, and you know, nothing's been resolved yet either. And let's talk about one character that we haven't talked about, which is the scenics, Montana and Utah itself. The cinematography in this, writing, acting is great, but the cinematography is pretty top notch as well.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful to watch. Yeah.
I find it very calming and soothing. Just some of these shots, even when nothing's said, they're just, you know, you get a nice birthing, cow birthing moment with Ooh. Lee and John, and Ooh. There's some really nice cinematography there. So
I, as someone who lives in the city slicker, let's say, I'd pay money to go to with my buddies to go out to a cattle ranch and, you know, move some cows around.
I would definitely do that. I want to do that so bad.
It just looks beautiful.
I hope that my friend Russ and my friend Matt and I can convince my friend Jason to go herd cattle with our families one summer.
Oh, now our families are coming too.
Well, okay, maybe that's... Yeah, I know. Me and Tash would love to do it. The girls would love to do it.
Yeah.
I think it'd be great to I would feel like a chump because, you know, you're a city, you know, you're pretending to be a cowboy for a week, but when else are you going to get to kind of do that thing? I would love to do a cattle run with you, Russ.
Well, thank you. I'm blushing.
Good.
Are you ready for act three?
Let me just see. I've got lots of notes for Act 2, obviously, because this is where Act 2 is where they established a lot of conflict, flesh it out more and all that. So Act 2 is probably where we're going to have a bulk of these notes. Give me a second, please.
Do, 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 do.
Yeah, I made mention about, you know, I think that there's been some stuff handed down from generations before. They mentioned five generations, this ranch. Anyways, they were, what's the word I'm looking at? Not pioneers of the town, but they started the town.
Oh, geez. Original gangsta.
Original gangsta. Frontiers, is that the word?
Frontiers? Yeah, pioneer. Sure. That sounds very Western.
They were in the front. They were in the front frontier.
They were part line of the Gold Rush.
Of near Bozeman, Montana here. I don't think the town's actually name is Bozeman, is it?
I think it's...
Bozeman is nearby.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure as far as the geography yet. Just I didn't do a deep dive of that. It was a little bit... I was a little bit confused because there was a whole this gentrification stuff going on. So I wasn't... Like, and there was this whole, like, there's a community being stalled politically to grow, and it was because they were trying, and it was it to do with the Dutton land, or was it to do with something that the Dutton land had control? It was a little bit confusing as far as all the political intrigue in regards to development and parts of it being developed and parts of it not, and who wanted it and who didn't want it. But yeah, a lot of that going on. I feel like that's going to be maybe we're going to sink our teeth into that if we continue to watch the show.
Right, right.
Like you said, John's kind of always sort of educating and schooling his kids. I feel like exactly like he's grooming somebody for one day to be the next. You know, he's Don Corleone, you know, and he's looking for his Michael to come and to take over before I get whacked. You know, and I think he's got a couple options
before
here.
Before he has
know?
A heart attack in the tomato yeah. garden.
With orange peels in his mouth. But, you know, he's got a couple options here. Wes Bentley, Lee kind of, you know, they touch base. You know, Lee doesn't think like a businessman. He thinks like a cowboy. And yeah. he's mentioned that, you know, sorry, Dad, I wish I thought differently. He had a simple take. A more simple take on their everyday ranchman life. We grow cattle. They eat. We farm them. We provide. They provide for me. And you know he's not going down the rabbit hole of dollar bills, yo.
Well, it seems like he's delegated all these responsibilities to each kid. So each kid is kind of perfecting one area of the business, but none of them, I think, could be at the Dutton head at this point.
Right. Right.
But if I was a betting man, I would go for Lee. I think Lee's got some, I think he's got some longevity in this show.
Yeah. It sounds like Lee's going to
go all the way. He's definitely not going to die by the end of this episode.
We are team Lee all the way. Team Lee. Let's move on.
Act three, a show of strength. John strikes back at both the developer and the chief in one day. He successfully diverts the river from the development, but the efforts to return the cattle back into Dutton ownership is complicated by Casey's support for the First Nation side, and a gunfight results in the death of his son Lee. Oh shit. And I thought Lee would go all the way.
Team Lee.
And two individuals from the First Nation tribe, including Casey's brother-in-law. Dun, dun.
Which, yeah, Casey puts a bullet in his head. No hesitation.
I mean, his new family don't f*** the old family.
Yeah, there's no there was no blending of lines there. It was don't mess with my family. No, I there's something else going on there.
I don't know if there was any love lost there, because there was a few scenes with Casey and his brother-in-law and they didn't seem to get along. There seemed to be just a little bit of rivalry or conflict between the two of them, and but yes, no, that was some cold blood killing.
Do you think they were in the Navy together?
Oh, yes, because they do have that conversation about pointing out...
The one guy with the really... I can't even pretend to go
that
deep.
What's that badge for?
Yeah,
what's
he's almost got like a bubble in his throat the way he talks. But yeah, they were going through Casey's war medals. Well, not war medals. War medals. I guess, whatever.
Pins, yeah,
Afghan,
exactly.
Hey,
what still is that,
war.
Blue star?
Yeah, and they talked about a Navy cross. I didn't have time to do any research. What you get? Well, let's do it.
I think he was a veteran Navy... Excuse me. I think he was a veteran Navy SEAL. I don't know if I'm making that up. He was definitely a veteran, a war veteran. But yeah, I think he did some stuff in the wars. And then he came back and it changed him. It changed a man. And he realized he didn't want to be under his father's hand anymore. And he fell in love. And that was Case's life until his father came back into it.
A Navy Cross is just about as good as a Medal of Honor. It's not quite there. So it's a pretty distinguished act of heroism. And Casey's got
a couple.
Yeah.
He's trading them on eBay.
I think he saved his brother-in-law's ass. I think they're both veterans. I think he saved his brother-in-law's ass somehow, somewhere in Afghanistan.
Is that how he met his sister, his wife to be? Maybe.
No, okay, maybe that's not, because then they would have had a bigger, a stronger bond.
Yeah, you'd think you go to war with somebody and you come back and you'd be tight as blood, no, man. You'd be.
I don't know. Maybe they were just both veterans, and the brother-in-law just chaffed them that Casey was one too, and he wasn't sort of the only veteran in the group, right?
And this has been Veteran Talk with Russ and Sean.
End gun battle's really cool. I really like the lead up to this final battle. There's not a lot of music in this show, but you know, just at the beginning of the third act, or shortly into it, they've got a nice kind of, it's almost like they almost play the entirety of a song. I don't know the custom track, but it was a pretty nice fitting suiting song while they're all driving towards this conflict, and John's in the front riding shotgun in the helicopter. And I think it's just kind of a really, especially in the fight scene, a really kind of cool use of using the helicopter. You kind of think, oh, you know, is he just going to land and get out and kind of get, no, they, you know, with the dusty locations of Montana and Utah and all that, a good helicopter when you're trying to ambush people comes in handy.
I, you know, most shows I watch, I'm like, well, them the good guys because they're in cop cars, and them the bad guys because they're wearing black suits and sunglasses or striped shirts and masks. But here in this scenario, like, I'm like, there's livestock agents, and then there's like reservation police, and you're like, who has the authority here? Like it's interesting. Like I just found the whole thing. I didn't do a deep dive in it, but I just felt the whole thing was like, what power does the livestock commission have that they can just give people badges and guns, and they can just go, I don't know.
That's just it. I mean, you know, this John guy is put on a pedestal, sort of. And I think because people are just afraid of him. I mean, this guy just does whatever he wants, whether it's within the law or outside the law. He finds ways to bend the law. And like you're saying, like, while you're sort of, or either I was rooting for Team Yellowstone throughout this show, you know, in a sense, they're sort of the baddest of the bunch,
right?
And especially considering, especially to the real estate developer, he's sort of portrayed as this slimy real estate, you know, guy. And in the end, he's the only one that's sort of doing his due diligence. Sort of, yeah, he's bending the law a little bit, but he's still playing within it. He hasn't broken any laws, not yet. Anyways,
he's just trying to give people a place to go to get ice cream. Like
and maybe in the past he has, but again, when you break down sort of all the conflicts in here, John's sort of the worst of the bunch, I find. He's the badass. He's the badass motherfucker.
And I like that with any story. Like, it's not, there's no true evil.
We're not rooting for the good guy here.
Yeah, everyone's bad. Everyone's good. It's everything's in the gray, which, you know, you have to make that decision for yourself on who you're voting for. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, obviously the show is manipulating you, and they want you to think that the Duttons are the good guys. But I think you have to take a little bit of a finer look into things and actually see what's happening here and make a decision based on your own values. But yeah, we've got three people dead by the end of the episode. Lee, the brother, which we thought was going to be, you know, our protagonist, but obviously not. And then the brother-in-law of Casey. But then there's two people from the First Nations tribe that die, and I don't remember seeing two people die. Obviously, one gets a bullet in the face.
I think it's just in the background. They just say in the background, that one died. Yeah.
Right. So bullets are flying, and someone's going to get killed.
It's game on now. I mean, he took a risk and did all this, and he did get his cattle back. John did get, if not all of them, most of them back, but he lost his son in the process. And I mean,
Not worth it.
Yeah, no, not worth all the $100,000 of cattle. It is to John.
It is their cows. They are adorable. No,
I believe he would trade his all the money he has in the world for his son Lee back, as you can see in the final moments of the episode.
It's on. Game's on.
His brother gifts his dad this wild Mustang that he's
tamed during the course of the episode. Yeah,
I believe as a as a token for Lee's death, you know, he lost a child and gained a horse. Well, it's not the same thing. I believe you can ride a horse, but you shouldn't ride children, a bit of a memento of Lee from Casey to his dad.
What I hope they do is they spend a little bit more time on the brother-in-law. You know, so here's two. Obviously, the Duttons are the main focus of the show, and there's a lot of focus on Lee's death and what it means and the funeral. And you see Casey's wife there, and you see that she's somehow, you know, in the mourning process. But I wanted to see more about what is the impact of her own biological brother dying too. And I hope so. If we go further with the show, I hope they spend a little bit more time with that.
Right. And at the end of the episode, she's begging Casey to give her more details on what happened and all that. And he still hasn't told her exactly what, but all she knows is her brother died in a gunfight. And it'll be interesting when she finds out that Casey put a bullet in his head, how she's going to react. Although, while I know she loves her brother, I believe she loves Casey more.
It would be hard. I think you'd really have to ponder that as a person.
Now how is her grandfather, you know, the brother-in-law's grandfather gonna react, or the reservation themselves gonna react when or if they do indeed find out that Casey was responsible for one of their own deaths?
Yeah.
Dun dun dun, game on. I mean, who do we fight? It's just Beth is gonna stick around for a bit. John's leaning on crazy soulless Wes Bentley to do things that require soulless actions. And, you know, who they're going to fight? They're going to fight everybody. Credits.
Yeah. Very intriguing. Predictions. Do you, if you were to watch further on, there's three seasons actually that are currently out. I'm sure they're making more. Who knows? What's your predictions for the rest of the season, for the rest of the show?
I got a couple here. Beth's going to bang more.
Okay, so Rip specifically?
No.
You think she's going to bang more than Rip?
I think she'll bang Rip again, for sure.
Well, let's hope she gets some Rip bang.
Yeah, good for you, Cole. But I think she's going to make her rounds. She's going to use her sex as a weapon. That's for sure.
I think she's going to use her brain for a weapon.
Well, her brain too. I think she uses a bit of both. You sexist
piece of shit.
No, I think Wes Bentley's going to go more of a political route. We've had a little bit of, is that the district attorney who he's dealing with, or who's that main? Well,
there's a couple of politicians that are introduced, and they both have kind of long brown hair, so they're a little bit confusing. But there's one
Governor Perry.
One's governor, and one's local politician who they seem to be under the thumb of the Dutton family. She seems to be promoting that
Wes has a future in politics, and I think future on down the line that he will jump into politics, and it'll somehow either he'll be leveraged to get information about his father for something, or he'll be pitted against his father in some sort of legal recourse or political turmoil.
Have you watched Succession on the HBO?
No, I haven't.
Succession is like the city version of Yellowstone. Okay. And it's amazing. And it's very, very similar in themes.
Put it on the list, man.
Put it on the list. It's on the
Make
list.
Make me and everybody else watch it.
Okay, Succession, everybody.
And then I guess John and this governor have some sort of... Nooner connection. They get together for Nooners. He likes
a good lunch.
Yeah, he likes. I could use a good lunch.
I could use a lunch.
Batman could use a good lunch. I think that'll get exposed somewhere in the future, and it will be used against him.
My prediction is that that Jamie, who's the son, the lawyer's son, is also dating this woman.
Oh, double
and so
bang.
There's going to be a little bit of like father son
kind of gang
triangle,
bang?
Love triangle. I don't know if there's going to be a father's son gang bang.
But gang bang?
Well, maybe a little love triangle.
No old school Montana.
Telly loves a good triangle.
Rodeo? No good old Montana rodeo?
I don't know what that means, but no.
I don't either, but use your imagination.
I don't want to. There's too many sexual positions with cow girl stuff.
I'm going to just circle back to this because I said I was going to, and we never did. But you mentioned Beth. Beth made a comment about no women in this family lives past 40 years old. So I'm curious what happened to the mom.
My prediction is that the mom died with some sort of responsibility falling on John, the father. So he did something. He made a decision. And it's probably unknown. And maybe only Casey knows it. And that's why he left the family.
Maybe.
But John made a decision that ended up in the death of his wife. Not that he intended that way, but that's what happened.
Or maybe Casey was responsible for his mom's death. And that's why he got the brand.
There's a good scene where all the brothers go fishing. And you can see a real connection between all the brothers. But you don't see that connection with the daughter, with Beth. And so there is a little question mark, like why does she seem to be estranged from the rest of the brothers, except for Casey? Casey seems to have a connection there, but that's something I feel like the show is going
to
go into.
Brother did ask her to come along, and her response was, I don't get on those things.
Right. So obviously she doesn't like the whole cattle thing, but our horse thing, but she doesn't seem to have a good relationship with the other brothers as well. Maybe just Casey.
She doesn't, she doesn't have a good relationship with anybody.
Anybody.
She's damaged. Something's going on with Beth where she cannot be emotionally connected to anybody.
You like her. Oh, I think another prediction is, I think Kevin Costner's character is going to be removed somehow. He's going to have a stroke. He's going to be lost. One of the kids is going to have to step up. It's going to give an opportunity. And maybe that's another kind of push for Casey to come back to the family. But maybe. I think something's going to happen to Kevin. And you think he's going to be out. And so down the kids step up, but he
Kevin's
comes back.
Never, as we know, Kevin's never down and out. When you think Kevin's gone away for good, he always comes back.
Just keeps on coming. He's a man of steel, or at least the father of. Are you ready to rate this episode?
This shit is awesome.
You suck.
Right. This is the part of where we have three categories: characters, story, and interest, and we break them down and give them a score out of 5. I'll start here. Characters. I'm giving it a 4.5. Great fleshed out characters. Everyone has their role to play and they're all very different. I'm intrigued by all the different storylines of these characters. And I'd probably wear a John Dutton t-shirt.
I see. Now this is all coming full circle. You would not wear a Dash and Lily shirt. You would not wear a Liberator shirt.
No.
You would not wear even an Andy Samberg Palm Springs shirt.
No, not a shirt with Andy Samberg on it, but I would wear a Palm Springs shirt.
Right. So
But John Dutton himself he's a character. I like him. He's a powerhouse. I'm just saying, yeah.
If I put the Yellowstone
John Dutton mug on a t-shirt.
If I had a shirt with John Dutton just like shooting a horse in the head, you'd wear it. Okay.
Yeah, and it would just say like one of his wise comments.
Yeah, sometimes the horse hits you and sometimes you hit the horse.
Be at peace and blow away. Wear my shirt.
I give this a 4. I give the characters a 4. I really enjoyed all of them. I'll admit it, I was spellbound by Kelly Riley. So if it was just Kelly Riley, I'd give her 5. But if I'm averaging out with all of them,
and soulless Wes Bentley just brought it down a couple notches, and the one dimensional Lee who got rocked, brought it down.
Our next rating is for story, and for me,
okay, well, it's my turn. I'd like you to.
Well, we don't want to take turns. You want to start?
Well, did characters. You did characters. No, I do story, and you do story, right?
Okay,
do you want to do two? No. Hey,
I see the pattern you're developing, and you want to stick with the pattern.
Back.
A B A B A B.
You know what? I'm all about switching things up.
You don't want to do A B B A.
You had a thought.
A C.
You had a thought.
No, you
bring
no,
it.
No, I'm done. I'm out.
Perfect. Story. I gave it a 5. I thought it was fantastic writing and with so many subplots going on, but it was still, they meshed them all well together. Like I mentioned previously, you get to touch all of them and they keep coming back to them. You don't get bored. You don't get lost. It's great. Each storyline seems to have an opportunity to really branch out into something within the series. So it feels like, you know, it's great. We're really set up to just getting started. It's not just the villains and conflicts, but also the characters and their arcs and development. So there's a lot to flesh out and a lot set up here to go off of.
I gave it a 3.
Oh.
And it's not because I didn't like the story. It's just because I feel like it was a lot of setup. So it's, for me, it's too early. I think I need to kind of see how the rest of the season pans out. But I feel like there's some really good pacing, which I enjoyed. Some slow pacing, slow build. We're putting all the pieces together. We've set the table. It's starting off good, but I'm gonna leave it at a 3 for now.
I've got a feeling I like this a little bit more than you did, and you're just trying to sabotage my rating here.
Yeah, because it's
like the overall rate. You're just trying to sabotage.
I want to bring it down. I don't. If it scores over Dash and Lily, I'm gonna be so f***ing mad.
Oh. I'm just kidding. Sorry. You have anything more?
No, I was going to introduce the next segment where you rate first. Sean, can you do interest, please?
I'll go now. Interest. Okay, great. I also gave it a 5. Obviously, this show really blew me away. I don't know if it was because I just spent 24 hours curled up in the fetal position in my bed with the stomach flu, and maybe I was just kind of...
How do you know it was a stomach flu? How do you know it wasn't COVID?
Because I got a COVID test.
Did you really? Have to gargle, or did you get it up your nose?
I got a cotton swab shoved up, not one, but both my nostrils into my tear ducts.
Why both and your nostrils? It's
because she couldn't get the first one to work properly.
No.
Yeah.
It's like when you go for an IV and they can't find the vein.
Yeah, I got it done, and I was basically, you know, at the mercy of the world in the fetal position. My wife drove me there, and we had to quarantine. We got the results back pretty quick, so it wasn't that bad, but, you know, 36 hours, we couldn't leave the house and all of, you know, the whole, until we got the negative test, which we knew it was, but we wanted to do the responsible thing because I had flu-like symptoms and all that stuff. Yeah. But
did it happen in your car? Did they do it while you sat in your car?
Yeah, they just rolled down the window and come up to you. So, yeah, it didn't take very long. There was nobody there, so thankfully. So, but yeah.
So what gave you the stomach flu? Did you swallow your poop or something?
No, I hope not. Maybe I got a little poop in me.
maybe your daughters are pooping on your pillow and you're just like pink eyeing it up all night. I don't know.
Who knows?
You're still going?
I just gave the number.
COVID. What number did you give him?
I gave it a 5.
A 5? Holy
interest level
smokes.
5. Okay, so, and believe it or not, yeah, even for, I must have really liked it.
You did.
Because it was an hour and a half, and I normally, you know, I go on about how things are too long, but
I loved
it.
You can't even handle 30-minute episodes sometimes.
I know. I was glued the whole time. I love the pacing. I got really into all the characters and the story. It pulled on my heartstrings. You know, I watched this on Tuesday. It's Sunday now. It's been 5 days. I have had such a hard time being restrained and not watching a further episode. All I wanted to do all week is watch the second episode of Yellowstone, but I didn't.
Good.
Because I wanted to keep like my predictions and my feelings genuine, and especially if I didn't enjoy episode 2, it would have probably interfered with my
like your Dash and Lily fucking episode. Well, sorry, I'm swearing a lot today.
You've said more F-bombs than I have.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sorry if that's offended you. It's okay.
Yeah, well, it's okay. I completely covered the F-bombs, so
yeah, you know,
it could be really anything.
My apologies. So
it is kind of
my apologies.
Friendly, if you can deal with shit and ass and titties.
I did watch the Nicolas Cage History of Swearing, and maybe that's what's got me hooked.
Yeah. So, I mean, other than I just about gave it a perfect score as far as me, I'm all in Yellowstone. I can't wait to binge the rest of it.
Wow, here we go. I gave it a 4. I'm definitely interested. I agree. I was there was many times at night I went to my iPad and I thought, I'll just watch the second episode because I'm ready for it, like you, to keep going, and I'm intrigued. So Don't know if I enjoyed it as much as you did, but I definitely enjoyed it.
Well, you know, clearly if you put the ratings together, you did not enjoy it as much as I did. But you did recommend it, and I thank you for it.
You're welcome. Right, I could have done Bridgerton, but I didn't. You're welcome.
I was going to get really mad at your first. We're not even going to talk about Russ's first choices for this.
Bridgerton. Series. I was going to choose Bridgerton and Howard's End. Amazing. That would have been what an amazing person I am. How smart.
How mean would it have been?
But I didn't. Here we are. Let's get into temperature check.
Like you want to throw up?
Okay.
This is the point where we talk about what we reviewed last time and just do a little quick recap. Sometimes Russ promises that he's going to watch it and then he doesn't, and I just call him out on it. We reviewed Palm Springs last time. It was a movie, so we really don't have any follow-up episodes to talk about. Have you watched it again? I went back and just rewatched the last 5 minutes, and yes, Russ, indeed, there were dinner.
Dinner. And there were dinner.
And yet, but indeed, what you say, I will say. You get cha. All right. Okay.
Cousin Belky?
I know that's just jibber jabber. You were right all along.
Yeah.
I didn't doubt you. I just wasn't sure.
Nor should
there
you.
There were dinosaurs at the end.
100%. It was not just an elucidated image. It was real life, those dinosaurs. They were real.
They were real.
You're right. We can't really go back on an episode because we really haven't done a lot and that we haven't already talked about. So what I'd like to do instead, Sean, is I'd like to go back and look at the year of 2020 and give our top 10 list of TV series that we watched. And I should say that these are just our top 10 list of shows we watched, not necessarily all shows, because we can't watch all shows. So there's probably lots of really good shows that will not be on our lists and are probably very good.
That's right. Yeah, we're not able to watch all of them, but out of what we watched, these were each of our 10 favorites.
And coming in on...
Before we get, like, start yelling at each other, maybe we should agree on the format.
Well, what
first.
I thought...
Are you going to do your whole list? Or are you going to say what you're... Are you going to say one, then me? Are you going to start from the bottom and go to your favorite or start with your favorite?
Well, I definitely think we should start at the number 10 and then go down to number one.
Start with our least favorite and go to our most favorite. Okay.
Yes. And then what I'm thinking is maybe we both do our number 10. So I'll say, all right, number 10. And then we both
and
say
how long do you
want 10?
To talk about it for?
I don't want to talk about it at all. I just want to say it.
Okay.
Is that work with you?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, just, if you want to say one sentence about it, you can.
If you are, yes, of course. But I mean,
okay.
But we're
not going to break it down or talk. Okay.
No,
yeah,
this
yeah,
is
yeah.
just a top 10.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Here we go. That's right, Sean. We're going to go through our top 10 for a TV series on the television or the streaming service. So let's go for number 10. What's your number 10, buddy?
Number 10 for me was Lovecraft Country.
Okay. I'm going to say another HBO show, The Third Day.
Oh, okay, I couldn't get through that one.
Yeah,
I'll go back and try it again. I couldn't. We liked the first episode, tried for the second, and the second one was just.
It gets nuts. And you know what they did? Okay, there's six episodes on HBO. In between the third and fourth episode, they did a live streaming event where they filmed on that island with Jude Law for like 24 hours straight. Which is supposed to, in chronological terms, as far as the episodes, it's supposed to take place between episode 3 and 4. It's like what just like I give it props for the ambition of what that show tried to do.
Okay.
But it is weird. And so the first three episodes, it's one director. Second three episodes, it's another director. They did a lot of kind of neat artistic things that are worth investigating.
I'm going to try and go back and squeeze through the second episode.
Yeah. And then if you can find
the stream. It was interesting. I'll give you that. But yeah, it just okay.
Yeah. Anyways, number nine.
Number nine for me was the mini docuseries, The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan story.
Oh, I heard good things about that, but I didn't.
I told you to watch it. And you never did.
Yeah. No, I don't follow basketball, but yeah, I was told even.
Yeah, neither do me and my wife, and we both quite enjoyed it.
Number nine for me is Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun.
I don't even know what that show is.
Did you see it?
No, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun. It's on Netflix. It's a sketch comedy group from Australia. You gotta watch.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, shit, I missed that one. Oh, yeah. And you know what? I don't know. It might have snuck into my top 10, but yeah, that's a good one. That's, sorry, sorry. Yeah, yeah, now I know what you're talking about. Crazy. Crazy, so just funny. Hyperactive yeah. comedy. Oh, so funny.
I went
the
down
guys
the,
are so quirky.
Yeah, I went down the rabbit hole, the YouTube rabbit hole with those guys, and it's
okay,
worth it for
I gotta
sure.
do that. Yeah, they're funny.
Number eight.
Number eight, I have, and thanks for, and from a mention from you, the flight attendant, Katie Cuckoo. Katie Cuckoo.
Yes, awesome. She didn't make my list, but I did really enjoy that show. Number eight for me was Raised by Wolves, another HBO. I'm an HBO fan. Yeah.
Nope.
Fair. That show was doing some crazy stuff that I really enjoyed. Number seven.
Number seven for me is an old school one that I just found for the first time, but it's been out forever. Orphan Black.
Oh, okay. So I guess we should say our top 10 list is not necessarily only 2020 series, but shows that we saw.
Series that we watched. Yeah, I guess. And it was new to me, so I thought I could put this on that.
You are allowed. That is
okay,
fine.
Thank you.
I kept my list to only 2020 series, but that's because I could. And sometimes I know that's not possible. Yeah, so Orphan Black, I've heard of many great things. It's somehow Canadian. Is the main actress Canadian?
Yeah, and I believe it was filmed in Toronto as well.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I heard amazing things about that show. Number seven.
What was for you?
Amazon Prime's The Great.
The Great.
It's great. You should watch it.
Again, I don't know what you're talking about here, but I like this. I like this. I've got some research to do and some new shows to watch.
Number six.
Number six for me was The Ozark Season 3.
Yeah.
I know some people dropped off after a while, but I still like it. I'm still into it. It's crazy.
Did they cancel it? I can't quite tell. Is it done or is there going to be a season four?
I'm not sure. If there is, and there's like threats that it might not be season five, I hope they just kind of wrap it up, because they could have maybe spent and wrapped it up season three. I kind of wish they do that sometimes rather than cross their fingers and hope that gets picked up for another season, because you could have something great that just sits there unfinished for the end of time. You know, when you're like, fuck.
Yeah,
why didn't
I think
you
the plan is
write
that
an ending for it.
That it is that it's been canceled, it's done, or that the season four will be the last season. I can't recall which what it is, but it's one of those things. Number six for me is the Middleditch and Schwartz series. I think there's three episodes on Netflix, and it's like they're completely improvised. It's just live tapings of them on stage improvising. It's amazing.
Again, another one I do not know. Maybe go. Say the name of that one again.
Middleditch and Schwartz. It's their real last names of the two improvisers that are on stage. Thomas Middleditch and Ben Schwartz. Thomas, he was on that nerdy computer HBO show, Silicon Valley. And Ben Schwartz is on a lot of stuff. Number five.
Number five for me is the really highly educational, thought-provoking, incredibly acted series entitled Cobra Kai.
They just released the season three.
It's fun and it's stupid and you know, it's just escapism. That's nice. All it is, and nostalgia from the Karate Kid series back in the 80s. So
yeah, my number five for me was The Queen's Gambit, because Anna Taylor-Joy is the best.
She is. And here's another podcast where we have mentioned her name.
Yes. Number four.
Four for me is Utopia on Prime. I just went all into this one and it got friggin' crazy and hyper violent. Like, awesome.
Okay. Hyper-violent, like unnecessarily violent, or I'm not big into
just
unnecessary
violence. Some of the
violent
scenes, you know, they're just a little bit more gory than normal.
Ew, gross. Number four for me was The Outsider, which was an amazing HBO kind of thriller, sci-fi, horror kind of thing. Amazing. And number three for you.
Where's my three? Three, I have the Queen's Gambit.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, again, we touched on it so much. So good.
Yeah, you liked it. And number three, We Are Who We Are, for me, another HBO show, which is really good. I definitely recommend checking out We Are Who We Are. Really genuine, very real stories. But yeah. Number two.
Number two for me is The Boys Season 3.
Oh, gross. Number two for me is The Mandalorian. Yeah. Disney Plus. Number one, Sean. Number one.
Oh, am I going to say The Mandalorian? I haven't said it yet.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think you really like The Mandalorian, so I'm thinking you're not going
to
say it.
No, I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, but I did not watch The Mandalorian or get into it like everybody else. I'm going to go back and give it a try. But my number one series of 2020 that I watched.
Yes.
If you're going to watch anything.
Oh.
You go back.
Sean recommended.
And you watch HBO's The Outsider.
Oh, there he goes. Yeah, my number four.
Yeah, it's my it's number
amazing.
One.
It's great.
Amazing.
Okay.
I watched it when it came out. I couldn't wait till every Sunday night for the new one to come out. It was so good. Yeah. So good.
Agreed.
And it wrapped itself up. You know what I mean? Like it was a one-off. Thank you.
Hey, if there's an Outsider season two, I'm in. There could be.
I guess.
Number one for
drum
me,
roll.
Top 10, 2020, I Will Destroy You. Check it out, HBO.
Isn't it about robots or something?
Yeah, it's about robots and they destroy humans. No, it's about a woman who is raped, and it kind of goes through her just processing that experience and just her kind of being... Just kind of, yeah, just her whole experience just with, and she's got kind of a group of friends that kind of surround her, and they kind of, the show goes a little bit into the friends' experience with that type of stuff. And yeah, it's very...
Revenge plot?
It's not really, well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, it's funny, it's scary, it's sad.
It's funny?
Just, it's
the girl
yes.
got raped and there's humor
not
in it.
Not that part is funny, but there's
parts
that
but
are funny about it. Yeah, no, there, like, she is like a... did you ever see the show Chewing Gum?
No, I didn't.
So she did a show on Netflix.
Did you ever see the show called Alf?
Is that a puppet?
It's about this puppet from space.
Okay.
He lived with this really nerdy family.
Mm-hmm.
And he ate cats.
Shit, he ate cats? Like, he would eat the family cat? Or did he eat neighborhood cats?
Yes.
So, so in I Will Destroy You, Michaela Cole, who's the kind of the creator of the show, she stars in the show. And she did a show on Netflix called Chewing Gum, which is a complete opposite of what I Will Destroy You is. But it kind of talks to her, just her ability to do comedy. But yes, no, it's amazing. I recommend I May Destroy You.
Cool. Now, do you have any, I missed a couple here. Do you have any special mentions that didn't quite make your list, but that you'd like to mention or anything?
Yes, I've got one. And I realize I screwed up on my number one title. I said, I Will Destroy You at first, but it is, I May Destroy You. My honorable mention, because I can't watch it real time unless I pay money. And I already pay enough for streaming services, is the Better Call Saul, recent season. I heard amazing things. I've watched everything that's been released on Netflix as to date, but not the most recent season. And that's the one I would probably rate very high in my top 10 list, but I just have not seen it.
You can't watch it on Netflix?
They release it 1 year after it's released on AMC. So I don't have any way of watching AMC shows. So I have to wait till
a year. Is it currently being aired? Like, is there a current season going on? Okay, I see.
Yeah, eventually it comes. As soon as it comes onto Netflix, then I catch up. But I don't think that's happened yet.
I've got two that that I missed. They were on my list, but I forgot to give them numbers, but it seemed to work out well because I think they were more of like an 11 and 12 anyways. Another docuseries called Don't Fuck With Cats is really good.
Yeah.
Go down the rabbit hole of that one.
It's insane.
Just watch it. It's crazy. And then another one, a UK series, and it was season two of it, but I really enjoyed season one, and I really enjoyed season two of it. It's called It's the End of the Fucking World.
Yeah, I really like that show too. The two main kids on that show are just amazing.
Yeah, they're psychopaths, and they bring in a third psychopath into the second season, and it's kind of like a parallel story, what's going on during the first season a bit, and then they all kind of, I don't want to ruin it, but it's good, and it's completely psychotic. And it's, the weird thing about this show is they're like 22-minute episodes, I think. And there's only eight. Oh, it's really, really easy to binge. Like, you could binge it in a night, and it'd be like watching, oh my God, what's that, 100 and, oh my God, Sean.
My what are you math trying to do?
I'm trying to do 2 times 20 times 8.
Why would you try to do that?
It's 2 hours and 40 minutes anyways. So it'd be like you could watch the whole series in just over 2.5 hours. So,
yeah. No, it's great.
I'm going to go back and check out, look at a lot of the ones that I didn't know, which I didn't know a lot of yours. And so that's great. Something to build off of.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna give Utopia a chance. I never gave it a chance.
I'll be back. Yeah, this is a segment where we go back and watch an old movie. I don't believe we watched this together, but it's certainly from the 90s when we were growing up.
I'm sure we watched it sometime.
So this maybe is not the first time we watched it, but we sure we watched it together.
So a nice little parallel to Yellowstone is the 1991 Billy Crystal flick City Slickers. Not only are they on a cow ranch working with cows, but they birth a cow in Yellowstone Episode 1 and City Slickers.
Yeah, we get a double birth. And what is it about birthing scenes that just brings two dudes together?
Brings people together. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Lee and John and Curly and Billy. Is his name Billy? Is Billy's name Billy in this movie?
I do not think so. His name is Mitch in this character. Mitch Robbins.
Well, Billy plays Billy Crystal, but in the movie, his name is Mitch. But let's not kid ourselves. There's no...
That is Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal is not some great character actor. Billy Crystal is Billy Crystal.
Yeah. Yeah. Wisecracking New York... Billy Crystal.
Mike Wazowski.
Directed by Ron Underwood, who also did Tremors.
Fantastic movie.
Which I only watched for the first time this year, or 2020.
Tremors
doesn't
get enough credit for what it is. We watched it in film school and dissected it. It's actually a really well-made, thought-out movie for what it is.
Very concise, very simplistic, but very good.
It's got great writing.
So a couple of things about City Slickers. Jack Palance, longtime actor, won his first and only actor Oscar as best supporting in this movie.
He won an Oscar for this movie.
He won an Oscar for City Slickers.
Who did he beat out? I would be so pissed off.
Well, I think it's almost like a career...
Like an honorary Oscar, kind of like, well, this is probably the last time you might even have a chance to win one. Here
and
you go.
And I think he did.
That is pathetic for people that actually, I mean, maybe Jack Palance has had some Oscar-worthy performances in the past, but this City Slickers is not one of them.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, Oscars are very political. Like, there's sometimes they reward the actor for their career, and sometimes they reward the actor
in
that actual film.
And sometimes they're not rewarded because of the politicalness, right? Like, look how long it took our man Leo to win one, right?
Yeah.
Well, our fellow Canadian Jim Carrey hasn't won one yet, and probably
and he never
deserved,
will.
No, but he probably deserved one.
Oh, Truman Show, for sure. He should have got one for Truman Show.
Man on the Moon was fantastic. Truman Show, he was fantastic. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, was fantastic.
Also in City Slickers is Daniel Stern.
Daniel Stern.
Phil.
Now, yeah. Where is... You know where Daniel Stern is probably the most famous for? That probably
Home Alone.
Not a lot of people know.
Oh, no. Not Home Alone?
Not Home Alone.
Doing the voice for Wonder Years.
Why'd you have to fucking wreck it? I'm supposed to drop that bomb.
You're asking me a question, and I'm super knowledgeable, so I'm sharing my knowledge.
That's right. Daniel Stern is the inner voice of Kevin Arnold, and right. He must do a little bit of something to his voice, because if you take... He must radio it up a little bit. You know, he puts a little bit of something. He puts a little secret sauce on it for the Kevin Arnold voice.
He talks in his low voice.
Yeah, people have that sort of
secret sauce. This is my broadcasting voice.
Yeah, like I don't normally talk like this. I add a little secret sauce when we're in the podcast here.
You dab a little secret sauce on your tongue. I can see it every time you talk.
I add a little bit of my secret sauce on
What's that
there?
On your tongue?
I like it.
Secret sauce.
Speaking of, you know, young kids, there's a young Jake Gyllenhaal is Mitch's son in this movie. Did you pick that up?
First and only film performance, Jake Gyllenhaal. This is 10 years before Donnie Darko, my friend.
And he didn't do anything for 10 years after this?
No, he did films between that. But the one that sticks out for me, like what was the one that made Jake Gyllenhaal engrave into my heart and it will never leave, was Donnie Darko.
Right. Your first Jake Gyllenhaal experience.
Yes, was the big one was Donnie Darko. But he did a couple of good ones before that. But that was my first. And that was 10 years after this. But yes, of course, Jake Gyllenhaal, crazy. The daughter is played by Billy Crystal's actual real life daughter.
Oh, cool.
This is Jake Gyllenhaal's first film credit.
Right. This movie doesn't age very well. I struggled getting through this one.
I know you had watched it. You had mentioned, you had texted me, maybe it was a little bit of a slog and I hadn't watched it yet. And I watched it over a couple of days, these last few days. And I did, I laughed. There is some funny bits in there. I laughed, but
it's campy, man. It's campy. I might have enjoyed it as a kid, but as an adult, you know, the humor's, it's not hitting the mark.
It was a big hit.
I know. And I see that Billy Crystal executive produced it and it was a big hit. So he probably made some cheddar off of it.
Yeah. This is peak career for Billy Crystal. Like, he's coming off When Harry Met Sally. He's been around, obviously, doing the comic relief stuff for a bit. He's already done Throw Mama from the Train. Like, he's done some stuff. But I think that they, like, after this, I don't think he ever, other than Analyze That or This or both
City
of them,
Slickers 2, the
Curly's
Gold.
I'm sure the two things he's done since then that's maybe been somewhat successful is Analyze This and The Monsters, Inc.
Voice of Mike Wazowski.
Yeah, that kind of stuff has been good for him. But aside from that, this is it. I think this is where he starts to go downhill.
Probably because he's such a fucking downer in this movie. All he does is whine and bitch, and like, he's such a downer in this movie. I just wanted to kick the shit out of him and call it a day. I used to be a big fan of Billy Crystal, but I think after watching this, I kind of realized, he was funny. He had his heyday. I think he's best more like a stand-up comedian or a support for him to be.
What about a host of an Oscar ceremony? Would you like?
Yeah, exactly. That's his wheelhouse.
How many times did he host the Oscars?
I don't know.
Yes.
8.
9 times.
Wow. Good guess, Sean.
What I thought was funny was there's a lot of animal jokes. There's a lot of animal stuff. Like obviously there's a lot of animal stuff. It's
like bestiality animal jokes.
No, but there's a lot of well-timed animal sound effects. Like, you know, they'll say something and then to break the tension, you'll just see in the background, you're like, murr.
There's a lot of cruelty too. Those two horses, the cook gets drunk on their escapades in the middle of the desert and ends up hijacking the chuck wagon that holds all the food supplies in it, and he ends up driving it off a cliff, and these two poor horses end up going off the cliff with this chuck wagon, inevitably falling to their death, and they just cut to the next scene that they've made these two shallow graves for these horses, and we're like, oh well, ha ha ha. And Billy makes some stupid fucking joke, and I'm like, you know, I know back in the day and whatever, and probably, but I didn't think that was funny at all. Like, it was just like, you didn't have.
Can we take a second and mourn these two horses, please?
Could you not have just shown the horses gotten unhitched for a second and just have the chuck wagon go off. You had to have the horses go, and then everyone's just so, oh, ha ha ha. It was two fucking horses fell to their death, you dick. And they probably had to euthanize them at the bottom and put a shotgun to their head and all that. And it's like, pull a John Dutton on them, and they're just laughing it off. And, you know, fuck you, Billy Crystal.
So the cook, Cookie, is played by Tracy Walter.
Yeah, this guy, he has all these odd characters back in the 80s and 90s. Who is this guy?
He worked with Jack Palance in a little movie called Batman. Do you remember Batman? So
don't forget your lucky deck.
Yeah, exactly. And then my favorite scene that I always, like, I'll do to my daughters now, which really creeps them out, is I pretend I'm Jack Nicholson and grabbing Tracy Walter, who played Bob the Goon, and you go, Bob, you are, I'm a number one guy.
And I am your number one.
And my kids are kind of like, why?
Hey, Jack, don't forget your lucky deck. And he does this, like, weird hand shuffle, drops them in his hat.
So I wonder if they're like a package. Like, if you're going to hire Jack Palance, Tracy Walter comes with them.
Yeah. They're a tag team duo.
Yeah. You want one in your film, you get the other.
Yeah. He animates Jack off screen.
Yeah. And they keep him going.
He pulls the wires and, and hits the buttons that makes him go.
I don't know if I recommend people watching this, going back to this movie or not.
I was just going to say, I don't recommend anyone go back and watch this movie. Leave it with your memories. Yeah. If you have good memories of it, don't go back and watch it. I thought I was going to enjoy this. It's 2 hours almost. It could have been an hour and a half.
Oh, it could have been an hour.
Yeah.
There are some funny bits, but not worth a rewatch. Are you ready for some stargazing?
Right, this is the part where we just talk about things that we've watched that we haven't talked about on the podcast and things that are upcoming that we're excited about.
You go first, Sean.
Well, I forgot to mention last week that I had finished The Flight Attendant, but now that I put it on my top 10 list, I don't really need to talk about that. Oh, wait, this is the one that I missed. I watched George Clooney's Christmas movie, Midnight Sky.
Do they celebrate Christmas in it?
Nope. Nope, they celebrate...
It's a Christmas movie because it came out on Christmas?
Yeah, because it came out on the... Came out Christmas Day, I believe.
I was combing my beard just then, so I don't know. I wonder if the microphone's picking this up.
Oh, maybe. It's good. Really good. Another great directorial feat from George Clooney.
How many good directorial films has he done? You don't know. I gotcha. Is Felicity Jones his daughter in it? Is that the big at the end? Did I just ruin it for people? I did. You didn't know that like 30 minutes into the show. You didn't know that?
No.
You didn't figure that out?
Well, I had an inkling halfway through. I knew that his daughter, that he was... the young girl that he was seeing was a figment of his imagination,
right. Okay.
But
you didn't know
that the girl on the starship that he's in trying to communicate with is his daughter until she slips it at the end.
Right.
Obviously you're a lot smarter than I.
Thank you for acknowledging it in a recording.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm infatuated with Tenet. Ever since I saw it, I've seen it twice. Oh, I want to go watch it again. I go down the YouTube rabbit hole. The more and more I look into it and think about it and dissect it, the more
you like it.
The more I like it. Definitely one of my favorite films of 2020. That's for sure.
Because you like time loop movies.
It is a time loop movie. They continue doing the same thing. They're just not reset. There's no time reset.
It's not a time loop movie.
It is a time loop because they keep these things keep happening. So it's looping. You just don't see the loop.
They're going
You don't see the
there's
loop.
No loop.
There is
there's
a no loop. It's endless no. loop.
It's
endless
no loop.
Loop. Infinite there's, loop.
The time keeps on going. They're
no,
just able
Neil
to go,
had to go
back
no.
in time.
Yes, time does keep on going for them,
time
but
loop
these
is resetting
events
time.
Will get looped forever.
Time loop movie.
No.
Groundhog's Day.
Whatever.
The
this is the part where it's good that me
back.
And Russ are not recording in the same room together. Even though we never put our hands on each other before. In rage.
Yeah, in lust, maybe.
Or in lust either. But what I'm getting at is, yeah, no, we kid.
It's a good timeline movie. You're right, Tenet. It's a good timeline movie.
Finished Cobra Kai. Is good. I watched that Pixar The Soul. It was Soul. It's good. It's not my favorite
yeah.
Pixar movie.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I'm yeah. not ranting and raving. Not ranting and raving about anything lately, except, you know, obviously our top 10 lists, I think, and Yellowstone.
Yellowstone. What I've been checking out, I've been going back to a show called The Detroiters. Have you ever heard of The Detroiters?
No, again, another show I've never heard of
there
that you,
go. You
mentioned.
Sam, stars Sam Richardson and Tim Robinson. Tim, both comedians. It's a comedy show. Sam, you maybe recognize from Veep. Tim Robinson is in a sketch show on Netflix called I Think You Should Leave. I don't know if you've seen that, but you definitely should see that.
Familiar.
He did a little bit on SNL. He's a very smart comedian, but he's kind of a little bit over the top. Like he's you know, watching Tim Robbins is kind of like drinking scotch. You just got to sip at it a bit. It's a little
okay.
bit. You can be a
like
little
Ricky,
bit too much.
Like Ricky Gervais a little bit when you first get into Ricky.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean,
no,
I love
you
Ricky
went,
Gervais.
You went full into Ricky.
I went full Ricky. I go
had,
full Ricky
I had to
all
do
the time.
Him in, I had to do him in bits.
I
still do. I still do.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying that with Tim Robinson and Sam Richardson, the Detroiters. There's only two seasons. I think you can find it on the Crave if you got the Crave. I started watching Earth to Ned, which is like on the Disney Plus. And
the
puppet guys, the late night puppet show.
Yeah, what's a variety show?
The variety
yeah,
show.
Variety show. That's it. Yeah, yeah. Really good puppets. Holy cow.
Yeah. But yeah. then there's like just the way they banter with each other, it feels improvised.
Yeah, I think it is. And then obviously the puppeteers have
yeah.
to react to it. And man, there must be three or four guys doing the main guy there, right?
Yeah. So I really am enjoying watching that just because it does seem very genuine and fresh and
nice.
Doesn't feel.
Nice.
Like, you know, other kind of hints and stuff just feels very managed.
I find we cover a lot of bases. You know, we meet in the middle with a lot of stuff, but then you kind of go off into sort of the comedy stuff that I don't normally go to first. And then I kind of go off into more
horror,
maybe, yeah,
action.
Not horror, but action, violent, maybe horror, you know, yeah, yeah, you know. And then we're always meeting in the middle in the good drama, in the good dramas.
In the good I love a good drama. All right, well, that is our episode. Thanks, man.
Thanks a lot, Russ. That was great. Yellowstone, City Slickers, top 10 of 2020,
And shit.
And a fart joke.
And a fart joke at least once. Nice.
Peace out,
bye.
Stinky. I like this and you like that. It's-